probably signed. Oh, good Lord.
Told you we weren't on.
Well, it is much louder now.
Yeah, that explains that. It's like technology.
We've got some stickers, some PowerShell.org, DevOps Collective, some PowerShell stickers we'll hand out. So if you don't get a chance to say hi or something, we're going to dash out of here. Please come down and do that. At 11 o'clock, I'm going to go over to the Conversational Geek booth. It's in the 600 aisle on the other side of the expo hall, so you're getting your steps in. They're giving away some copies of some books I wrote for them. And so be happy to sign those, shake hands, give you a free book. What?
Do the seat thing. You know what? As soon as they fill up, then we'll go. We can start early, get a few more minutes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So if you're sitting next to an empty seat, please raise your hand. As soon as those get filled,
yeah,
as soon as the hands go down, we start the session. So come on in, sit down.
But meantime, do you guys know the significance of this year and a couple of months?
Who are these reserved for?
10 years of PowerShell.
Woo!
Who'd have thought?
Yeah, me.
Yeah, he did.
The hell.
So I was
turns
actually.
Out when you release something and then time goes on, 10 years passes. I'm not sure what the confusion is.
I was I was really honored to be asked to present with Jeffrey at TechEd Barcelona in 2006 when they launched PowerShell. So they did the launch that week. A little bit later in the week, they wanted to show some of the things that the various partners in the ecosystem had already done. I worked for Sapient Technologies at the time, and we had already built PowerShell support into PrimalScript. So today's kind of a big deal for me because it's 10 years later, and I've enjoyed presenting with Jeffrey several times since. But because this is PowerShell's 10th birthday, I was just wondering if we could sing happy birthday to its father. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear PowerShell.
We gotta get a picture. Hold on.
Happy birthday to you.
Take a picture. Thank you.
And many
we'll
more.
We'll be cutting this up and sharing it at the end.
And I got you something.
Here,
share a Coke and a smile.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's just Coke, but.
Yeah. Okay, I think we should get going.
Yeah,
shall we?
Yeah, you start.
Okay, so PowerShell V5, anybody using PowerShell? Oh, okay, good, that's good. And how about version 5? Okay, great. PowerShell version 5 is pretty rocking. And so what I thought I'd do is just to, just have some fun here. And I thought I'd show just a very, 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 very small portion of PowerShell version 5, but do so showing the techniques that I think make PowerShell such a great tool. I gotta tell you, in the early days of PowerShell, at some point we got enough of the system up and running, and what we noticed is we were running between each other's offices like, oh, check out what Bruce did. Oh, hey guys, come here, check this out. And we noticed we were having fun again. I mean, it was just fun. And I realized it was that point I thought back and I said, boy, at some point, computers stopped being fun. I mean, there's always been this sense of amazement and fun. And I don't know what, somehow this sort of destroyed it for me. It was just clicking through the GUIs. But when we had PowerShell, the fun came back. And what I figured out was that all of a sudden I could look at your work like, oh, wow, hey, guys, come here. You should see how Don clicks that mouse. I mean, it's just amazing. There's a little twill, and it's like, no, that never happens.
I have a nice tie like you now.
Oh, look at that. That is nice.
I wanted to dress almost just like you.
Okay.
Usually you wear a white shirt, so I got that wrong.
Oh, yeah. We should have coordinated.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, but when Don writes a script, all of a sudden I can see it, and I can see the way he thinks, and I can see, oh, that guy's pretty clever. And then if I use the script, then all of a sudden I have a debt of gratitude, and I was like, oh, thank you, and I'll buy you a beer. And then I say, hey, you know what? There's a better way to do it. And I say, hey, here's a better way to do it, and he gets better. So anyway, it just became fun again. So I thought I'd kind of go back to that and show you, tell you a little story that really happened and have some fun.
It's not actually your slide deck. It's common copyright myths.
Oh, okay. You want to talk about that? What?
You don't have a deck. You just used a template.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's not relevant.
Okay. Your point. Wow.
Do you have PowerShell?
Mr. Pernickety here. Wow. Okay. Okay, so yeah, hey, if you're interested in Linux and PowerShell, you want to make a note of that address and fast follow him. Anthony's coming up to speed. He's a Linux guy learning PowerShell and then communicating a bunch of great lessons for it. Okay, so.
It's real quick on that. Jeffrey did a whole, I think it's like a 5-hour video where he essentially convinced Anthony, a Linux guy, to love PowerShell. So it was Jeffrey, Anthony, and then Jason Helmick. And Pluralsight has that available for free for everybody. So we're just hosting it for free. If you want, I'm going to put some of these cards. If you want to remind yourself of the URL, it's got the little PowerShell hero on the front. And if you don't grab one here, we'll have some down at the bookstore as well. But it's a great watch because he also goes off on this wonderful tangent kind of where PowerShell came from. Oh, does this whole whiteboard epic thing. So it's a really, really good video to watch. So I'll put these up here.
Yeah, really good stuff. Okay, so how many, if we have now open source PowerShell. Crazy great stuff. By the way, so this all flowed from, hey, we wanted to, we're refactoring the operating system, NanoServer. NanoServer does not support full .NET framework. It only supports .NET Core. So we had to refactor PowerShell to work on .NET Core so that it could work on NanoServer. Well, guess what? Turns out .NET Core is cross-platform. So that was how and what enabled us to now be available on Linux. Still a lot of work to do there, but available on Linux. And then as part of the mix, we decided we'd open source it. So big announcement, Microsoft PowerShell, you know, kind of crown jewels, now available on macOS and Linux. Published this, happy days. By the way, we have this new vice president in charge of open source software. He's a buddy of mine, great guy. And so, you know, having tweeted this, having released this, he then sends me this tweet, right, or this message saying, hey, someone asked, how many downloads have we had? And he answered. I said, well, how did you know that? And he said, hey. And he sent me this, right? So if you can read this, he did a curl of GitHub, and he piped it to grep download, and then, good Lord, through this awk script and then the sed script, and he taunts me. He says, can PowerShell do that? I said, okay. Challenge on, baby. Challenge on. So, of course, this doesn't quite work for us, right? Because if you do a gal of an alias of curl, that maps to get invoke request. So I said, okay, well, I'll go explore get invoke web request. So first I go and I grab the URL that he gave. I said, oh, okay, I didn't know they had that. And then I do an invoke web request. Okay, well, what's, does that help? Anybody know the answer yet? No. What the heck's that thing? Well, the great thing about PowerShell is, of course, the exploration features. One of my favorite ones, so first, number one thing you do, get something, put it in a variable, right? Because then you can party with the variable.
So here's a piece of the process, by the way, that you're missing. And I think it's an area where a lot of people go off a cliff with PowerShell really quickly. He's kind of showing you the end result of his playing around, right? He's taken all these commands and put them into a script, mainly so he can come up on stage and run them one line at a time without having to type them, because he's a terrible typist. But he started in the console just running the command. And when he got a command that kind of worked and looked good, he just copied and pasted it, and you can save it in a script. And that's kind of the lesson here, is you don't have to start with some giant end game. You can just futz around a little bit and play with it. You don't have to get the right answer every time. It's fine if you get it wrong, because you're going to learn from that. And then when you get it right, it's easy to save that. So the power of PowerShell is that it's not just a scripting language like VBScript, where you have to write something start to finish and then run it to see what happens. You can just run a command. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try something different. Let me go ask somebody. You don't have to come out of this with whole cloth. And so that's an important part of this process to keep in mind, not just the end result, but how you got there.
Yeah, now in this script, in this demo, I typed it all out because I wanted to show you a whole bunch of things really fast. But when I think our first demo, our first presentation together, I did it all live, right? And I'm making spelling mistakes, and I'm getting this wrong and that wrong. And here it is, right? Well, at the time, what was I? Distinguished engineer? Anyway,
yeah, but, something.
Pretty senior guy, inventor of PowerShell, getting it wrong. And we got some comments from the audience saying, boy, there's a lot of misspelling. That was a waste of my time. It's like, no, you don't get it. That was on purpose, right? I purposely showed you. No, I mean, I did not purposely make the mistakes. I purposely showed that I make mistakes all the time to convey that even as the inventor of PowerShell, somebody works with it every single day and is a pretty senior guy, mistakes are a natural part of the thing. So if you make a mistake, don't think, oh, I'm an idiot. No, that's the deal. You make mistakes and you just trudge through and then you don't make them. Okay, so I got this variable, and the question is, well, boy, looking at that didn't really help me. Well, let's do a two-string, because there was something about download count, right? So in his thing, there was download count. So let's search for that. SLS is select string. So I'll search for that. And it turns out that was not so helpful. I was thinking, okay, well, he grepped for download count, I'll grep for download count. That did not work so well. So then I thought, well, okay, time to explore. Lee Holmes has written this great commandlet called show object. If you don't have that, all you have to do is type install package PowerShell cookbook, and you'll get it. Okay, now it turns out PowerShell cookbook has an early version of format hex. So it'll warn you, hey, you're gonna whack your current version of format hex if you have version 5. So you have to say allow clobber. And that'll replace it. Anyway, so he's got this great show object. So let's explore that thing. Show object X. Hello, did I get there? Okay, so this is show object. By the way, too small, right? So control plus, make it big. And okay, what do I do with that, right? So this
is the coolest way. I mean, how many of you have used getMember to see what an object looks like? But with a really complicated object like this one, you just get a bunch of curly braces and stuff, right? This lets you explore that. It breaks it down. It's like an object explorer. So it's a really useful tool. If you don't know what it is a command just returned, this is a great way to just explore and look around and see what's in there.
Yeah, so exactly. And the nice thing is it's good for doing hierarchies, right? And so anyway, so I fuddled around with this thing for a while before I finally figured out, okay, so it's actually all elements 3. I grabbed the inner text. That inner text was JSON. So then what I did was I converted the JSON to, using convert JSON, it takes a JSON document or JSON string and converts it to an object. And then there was the first object, and then it gave me the assets, right? So let's show you what that looks like. Remember I told you about mistakes? Okay, so let's just select that and show you. Okay. Blech. Anyway, so I assign that to X, and then I say $X through sort download count, format table, let's just run the whole thing. And voila. Okay, so it's pretty, it took me a while to find the right elements, but I found it. Happy days. And looks pretty good. But notice it's longer than his was. So, like, that's not going to work, right? I got to show these Linux guys who's boss, man. Curl, what the hell? So what do I do? What do I do, right? I've reached the limits of my competence. So what do? I send mail to the team. I said, hey, by the way, you might be interested in the download counts. Here are the download counts, and here's how I got it. By the way, anybody know a shorter way to do it? Throw out the challenge. And Lee Holmes immediately comes back and sort of like, very polite. He's Canadian, right? Very polite. He said, but if it was me, the mail would have read, hey, you dope, you're using the wrong command. When it's an API, invoke web request is awesome when you don't have an API, okay? When you don't have an API. So if you just have a pure web page, you call invoke web request, and it parses the web page, and so you can like walk through all the elements so you don't have to screen scrape.
But the downside of that is you have to do all this to then turn all that web page stuff back into something that you can easily work with.
Right.
So it's a little awkward. You can do it, but it's a little awkward.
Yeah. So anyway, so the lesson there is hack around, have fun, lots of good stuff. So anyway, so Lee said, oh no, invoke REST method, IRM, that's the way to do it, and it's really simple. I said, okay, well great, let's do that. Let's see what I got there. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, now invoke REST method is basically sort of invoke web request, invoke whatever. And when it finds a JSON document, it auto converts it to objects, right? So I got these objects. And again, great thing to explore. Take a look here. Let's see. Oh, so there's the name. And somewhere here, somewhere I found the downloads. I'm not seeing it right now.
Isn't it assets? If you expand assets.
Assets. Oh, is it assets? Assets URL. Assets. Oh, there you go. Teamwork. Oh, there it is. Download count. Voila. By the way, if you're not familiar with show object, as you select something, down here it's showing you both the expression you use to get at it and then the type definition of the thing. So there you go. Download count and the name. Okay, so that sounds like the stuff I'm looking for. So now what I'm going to do is I do this invoke web request, grab the first thing, show the assets. Well, let's just do that. Select and show. Okay, pretty good. Now I sort it, minus D descending, D star, because there's only one property for download, that one property that's kind of started with D, and that was download count, and I'm a terrible typist. And then we'll format. So check this out. Voila. And guess what? I think it's shorter than that curl script. Of course, it's shorter because of the wild cards. But anyway, so that was a blast. So the lesson there is, you know, hey, reach out to the community, right? You have got an amazing community, people who want to help. Look, when you ask for help and someone helps you, they feel good about that, right? They feel good. Hey, I helped somebody today. And so by asking for help, you're giving someone the opportunity to help you. And in doing so, they get a debt of gratitude. You meet them at a conference, say, hey, thanks so much. Buy them a beer, buy them a coffee. It's a wonderful thing to be part of the community.
But here's the corollary to that, and this is especially true with PowerShell. If you're asking for somebody, so let me give you a non-technical example of what happens. Well, because we answer a lot of questions on the forums at PowerShell.org, and a lot of times someone will get in this exact situation, right? Jeffrey's first approach was, I'm just going to grab the whole web page and then I'll go parsing it. You can get really stuck in a groove. So here's an analogy to take you out of the technical groove. Hi, you know, I've got this Volkswagen, and I need to get it from in front of my house down to the grocery store. And I am standing behind the thing, and I am pushing as hard as I possibly can, and it's just not moving very fast. Can you guys help me come up with a faster way? Well, sure, you could say yes, go get some friends, you know, push harder, move to a place that's uphill from a grocery store. So there's a lot of things you can do that will answer your question directly. But be open to someone saying, yeah, get in it, and go about this in a totally different way. Release the brake, right? Start it. And so that's kind of the experience he had when Lee came and said, no, totally different approach. Don't grab the whole web page, use this API instead. A lot of times I'll see people get really resistant to that. Yeah, I don't understand what that means. I understand this, I'm just gonna hack my way through that. You'll be a better person at the end, and you'll learn more if you can just take that step back, listen to somebody who's maybe solved this once or twice. Don't let them give you the answer, let them give you a clue. Because if you can work through it the rest of the way, even with a couple more clues, you will then have something that you can use in a lot more, oh my God, now I know how to drive a car. I've been pushing these things around since I was 16. This is much faster, right? So you'll get something extra out of it. So really be open to somebody pointing to a totally different approach and you just throwing away everything you've done and starting over. That's part of the fun. Yes?
I don't know about you. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I'm always fascinated at the way Don's mind works. Like, who would have come up with that analogy?
All computer analogies can be done with a car.
Okay. It's good. It's good. Okay, great. So, great, return. Okay, so there you go. Fun stuff. So then I thought, okay, well, that's great, but you know, I just got the answer once. I want to automate it. How do I automate? Here's the way I automate almost everything. Function T, right? There you go. Just put it all in there. And then, hey, how many downloads? T. How many downloads? T.
You have to understand that he comes from this like strong Unix flavored background where there's a shortage of letters. No. Everything is like one letter. Yeah. That's why all the aliases are like and yeah.
Yeah. They look like noises you make in the night.
But the
with company.
The real lesson here is anytime you do something in PowerShell, once you solve it, you know, you've hacked it out at the command line. Maybe you've pasted it into a script so that it's repeatable. You're not done unless it's a function. PowerShell is built around the idea of running these commands, and function is a type of a command. It's built around the idea of running commands that do typically one very tightly scoped thing, and then they emit whatever it is they're doing to the pipeline, and you can connect these things in order from there. So until it's a function, you're really not done. A function is the first step in making it a reusable component that you could then share with other people. So scripts are great, but functions are even better. Because you have multiple functions in a script.
Right? We're getting wild now. And it's true, though, I really do have a lot of scripts called T and A and S and Q and B and V, because they're really easy to type, and not so easy to remember. But anyway, I do. I use them a lot. And that's the point. Hey, it's fine. Often with automation, you're doing stuff, you know, quick and dirty, right? Bruce Payette, you know, kind of co-designer of the language, had this great phrase. He said that there's the life cycle of 99% of the scripts in the world start with the prompt and end with the carriage return. And that's right, right? So anyway, so it's fine to be informal. Okay, you don't have to make everything some big formal thing. However, then I heard this statement, right? Said, okay, so there's this conversation. So in particular, I picked this one because it brings up curl. And if you paid attention during the launch of PowerShell, what you saw was we announced it at the beginning. First few hours, everyone's very, very excited. And then all of a sudden, the trolls started coming in, right? And in particular, there's one guy who's actually a great guy, and he was very polite, et cetera. But he owns curl, right? And so he distributes curl. It's a cross-platform tool. And he just did a pull request saying, hey, eliminate the curl alias. Because when people install my curl on there, they don't get it. They get yours instead, and it's screwing everything up, right? Well, that's a breaking change. So Jason immediately said, hey, that's a breaking change. You can't do that as a pull request. We got to go through a process and talk about it. And then I immediately said, yep, let's do this. Let's fix this. Let's do the RFC. Anyway, all the trolls started attacking. Oh, evil Microsoft grabbing curl, arrogant, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, So fine.
Reddit's wonderful, by the way,
Oh, my Lord. The vigor. Yep. Oh, my Lord, the venom. That was it. Anyway, so, you know, I was very, very polite. I did really well. I don't know if you noticed that.
You were very polite.
Until that evening when I got home and had a beer.
Then he starts texting me, his SOBs, and I'm fucking trying to do the right thing. And
well,
I'll show them embrace and extend.
This one guy on Twitter said, don't install PowerShell on Linux. It'll ruin your OS. Except he spelled it R-U-N-E. And so having had a beer, my inhibitions, and so I said, well, how about if it checked your spelling? Valuable then? Anyway, so I shouldn't have done it. I walked away from the keyboard after deleting the tweet.
The actual best one was, this is a terrible website. I can't even find the download links. This looks like some 2008 WordPress site. Because he was on PowerShell.org, which is not actually owned by Microsoft and is not where you go to download anything at all. So there was a lot of hatred over that, and it was awesome. Good times.
So we did the RFC. And then, again, all the flames and I heard someone in the hallway, people saying, oh, everybody's saying X. You know, read through the thread, the community consensus is X. And I was like, well, I read that and I didn't get that conclusion. So let's just go explore. Let's use data, okay? So turns out there is this API, went to the repos, PowerShell's the owner, PowerShell RFC is the repo. And so the particular issue was issue 16, and you can grab the comments, and you can grab them a bunch at a time, okay? So it's as simple as invoke web request, grab these, grab the user, grab the login, I'm gonna group it, and I'm gonna sort it. So first, let's see this. Well, first, let's do this. Wah. Okay, nice structured objects. We're used to that.
So many comments.
So then we go, oh, there are all the users. Okay, so I had this suspicion, and so I grouped them by the user and did it by count. And I noticed, hey, you know what? No, actually, this mostly is this flame war between these two guys. Going, you know, the top two, look at that. The top two guys are the vast majority of it.
We like the second guy, by the way. He's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Dave.
So I decided I'd build myself a tool to explore the comments, right? Do a little bit more. So I wrote a function, and now I make it a little bit more formal, right? Because I'm going to use this. And I had it in my head, like, hey, and I'm not going to go tell everybody, hey, here's what the answer was. I say, hey, here's a tool you can go explore the comments and find out for yourself, you know, what's really going on. You know, gather the data. So what I do is I get the owner of the GitHub, the repo, because we have a number of different repos, and the issue, right? It's a number, int. And so I just go ahead and I get this thing, I invoke the web request, and send it to the output, okay? So pretty simple, a little more formal, but a little simple, right? So I define that, and now I take a look at issue 16. And here's a technique I often do, right? I'll run it and take a look at the output, but then I want to capture it, right? So if I had said $C equals this, well, then I'd capture it as $C, but then I'd lose all the output. By saying output variable, everybody familiar with output variable? Anybody?
Minus OV is output variable. You specify the name of a variable, so not the dollar sign, just the name of it, and it'll not only dump the output to the pipeline so that you can see it on the screen, but it'll save a copy of that same output into that variable. It's a really useful hacking around trick.
Let me just show you how this works, because I use this all the time. Let's see, like. Oh.
So if you've ever wondered, how can I capture the output of each step in the command, look at what he's doing right now.
Okay, so there you go. I get all the processes, and I said output variable A, where name like SS output variable B, group by name out there. So $A.
$A is the first step.
$B.
B will be the second step in the pipeline. So you can now examine what each command did. So if you're running a really complicated multi-part pipeline and the end result is not what you expect, it's because somewhere along the line something didn't happen the way you thought it would. This is a great way to examine each step. Okay, A, that's what I expected. B, no. B is not what I expected. Great, now you know where it went wrong, and you can back off and try and fix it. It's a really, really cool trick.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to run this. I'm going to see all the issues, and I'm going to capture them as C for comment. Again, a big famous.
Lack of letters.
Exactly. Just what I was looking for. Okay, so now I can say $C.user.login, get all the names. Great. So now what I thought I'd do is now all of a sudden I've got this, you know, a little bit easier way to do things. Get this, grab the user.login, group it, sort by descending. Same thing I did before, but now it's a little bit easier for anybody to pick up and do.
And a quick lesson, functions in PowerShell, any command in PowerShell should do the minimum number of things it can. Jeffrey did not write a function that got the comments, sorted them, grouped them, and formatted them. Right, that's four different things. It's just the comments. That's all this function did. Because sometimes you might want to sort and group. Sometimes you might not want to. Sometimes you might want to dump all that data to an XML file or a CSV file or output it to a PDF or something like that, right? So you want to keep each of your functions as minimally scoped as possible. Don't think about what you might want to do with that data right now. Just do the data and then pipe it to another command. Because tomorrow you might want to do something different with that data. So you really keep each of these tightly scoped and they become more reusable. The worst thing in the world that I see people do is try and jam all this stuff together, and inside their function, the last command will be format table. You've just made that data useless for anything basically but displaying on the screen or dumping to a file, and you've really reduced the reusability of that command. So keep everything as tightly scoped as you can.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I'm rethinking that one.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that. But no, as you know, the Unix guys have this from the essence of this model, right? Small tools that do just one thing, and then you compose them to do, you know, solve novel problems, right? The problem is if you try and have it all in one, you know, one tool that does everything, it meets the scenario or doesn't. But recently, you know, I started looking at not using Linux for a while. And when I went and looked at it, now like PS has like 90 parameters. LS has like a gazillion parameters. And I thought, well, why are these guys who are so into that camp doing it? And I realized, I think what happens is, as they try and go to broader reach,
they get tired of typing.
They get tired of typing, or it makes it simpler. So yep. I don't know. I've been rethinking that one.
I'm sticking with this.
Okay, good. All right, now, so here what I'm going to do. Now, notice I had to do this, you know, this strange-looking thing, right? Blah, 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 blah. Well, I didn't want to do that. And so if you're not familiar with it, format table has this ability, right? So you can say format table and give a set of properties, but you can also give a hash table, and that's what this thing, this wonderful-looking thing here is. Oh, God damn.
Fail.
This thing is, it's a hash table, and it has two elements. First, I give it a name. That's the thing that's going to be like a property. And then I give it an expression, and that expression is a script block. So it takes the current pipeline object, grabs the user, grabs the login, okay? And then I ask for the body, and I'll wrap it. So let's look at this, and then, okay, so now, let's take a look at this again. Come on. I told you this thread went on for a while, right? Look at this thing. Good Lord. What? Really?
Yeah, you're there you go.
Okay. So notice here now it says use. Okay, I'm not going to walk away from the keyboard. Notice at the top it says user, right? So that's a much better thing, right? And so now I said, you know, anyway, so user then mapped and you took that expression $_user.login. And so first off, there's a number of places in PowerShell where you can use a construct like this, where you're working with properties, but in fact, that's not quite what you want. You want something a little different. And often you can use, insert a little script block there to get exactly what you want.
Is there anyone, quick show of hands, if you've never seen that little @ hash table trick before with format table, anyone never seen that? So,
Hey, it's valuable to you, though.
Yeah. Anyone ever seen this before? Yeah? If you had never seen this before, do you know where you could have learned about it? No, my book. It's in the help file. And one of the things I mentioned anytime I teach a class is every time you use a PowerShell command for the first time, after you're done playing with it and you kind of get what you want, go back and read the full help. So yeah. help -full or -show window, which actually is a little bit easier to read, or hop on TechNet if you want to read the online version of it, and read all the examples, because there's hidden gems in a lot of these different commands. And the benefit of the online one on TechNet, too, is that people can log in with their Microsoft.NET Hotmail Live Passport ID, and they can add their own content, so there's community content as well. And it's these are the little tricks that you pick up that way. So you can just pick them up kind of one at a time, learn slowly, accumulate more knowledge about the product that way.
You know, that is such a fantastic tip. The thing I really want everyone to appreciate is that you have two jobs. Okay, you have two jobs. You think you have one job, you in fact have two jobs. The first job you all know you have is to accomplish some task. Right? We all have that. But you have a second job. Some of you are aware of it, some of you aren't. Your second job is to accomplish that task in a way that maximizes your integrated lifetime earnings. Okay, right? So you have some task to do. And you say, oh, well, I could do it a number of different ways, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I'll use Scala. Well, you could do that. It might be great. But I guarantee you, when you put, you know, hey, I've got 5 years of Scala experience on my resume, you know, knock on 10 doors, not so many are going to open, right? But if you, so that's the point. You want to solve in a way that's going to increase your earnings over time. So as you're trying to accomplish some task, often you're doing what I'm doing, right? Struggle, 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 whack, whack, whack. Oh, finally I got it.
That's the job.
That's the job.
The next step, though, and I'll use a different word, is career.
Oh, that's better, yeah.
Your career is yours, right? Your job is your boss's. He can give it to someone else. Your career you take with you. So as you're going through these steps and you're doing your job, make sure you're also forwarding your career so that you know more that makes you more valuable. You're responsible for your career. So that's your time now to go, okay, let's dig into this a little bit deeper and find out a couple of other ways I could have done this.
Yeah, and often what happens is as you're struggling through this, you're reading things and you're like, huh? And then at some point it all kind of clicks and it comes together and you got something to work. Going back and rereading those things, it's like, oh, that's what that means. And then you'll have this thing that says, oh, I wonder if I could do this. And you'll explore and you're like, Oh, that's awesome. So I really do want to encourage you to think about those two things, your job and your career. Do your job so you don't get fired, but make time to invest in your career by learning these techniques and then exploring different ways to do it. Because then at some point, the boss is going to say, hey, we need X. And when you're the person who's Johnny on the spot, gets it done, and just wows them, they say, hey, it's budget time. We got to give some money out. Who should we give it to? How about the guy who saved our bacon?
Yep.
So, all right. So that's great. Right? So you saw that big email thread with those guys, right? So let's clear that. At some point, somebody said, hey, these conversations are going south, right? And so what I did was, remember, I captured it as $C up here. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say $C. In PowerShell version 4, we introduced a new syntax, and that's the dot where. So I could have said $C pipe to where body match
dash 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 dash, dash, dash.
Okay, could have done that, but instead I'm doing it with this syntax. Why? So I could show you it. But the second reason is that it's actually a lot faster. So if you like it, and if you like it, it's a lot faster. Anyway, so I'm going to find these comments where they were vulgar. We said vulgar, okay, that didn't help me. So I'm gonna format it, grabbing the name and the body. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Using pissed off is unprofessional, at least to me. I didn't use any vulgar slangs or words. Like, okay, what's going on here? These two guys are going at it, so this guy and this guy. Let's find out what's going on there. Where the heck was it?
It's also a life lesson about what to not put on public forums that might wind up in a session at a major conference. With your name on it.
It's the public record, baby, public record. So now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna say—
Although that copyright slide now makes sense. I understand why you—
Oh. Oh, really? Should we read that again? Okay, so now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do the same where, right? And I'm gonna say, hey, is the login? So I wanted to do two things, right? So in this where, you can only have simple expressions, right? I don't think you can support and. But turns out there's lots of different ways to do things in PowerShell. So what I was gonna say is, you know, $_user.login equals this guy, or blah, blah, blah equals that guy. So first off, that was gonna be long. And then second, I couldn't do that in this format, right? So, but then we have the dash in. So what this says is, hey, grab that name, and is it in the set of these two things? So that's another way of selecting it. So then we'll do the same thing. By the way, let's do a clear.
Anybody ever get frustrated that it seems like everything in PowerShell, there's four ways you could do it? Yep, that's a feature.
Yeah.
Right, don't be frustrated by that, embrace that, because each of those works a little bit differently. Where object is very flexible. I mean, you can write an entire script to do your filtering, but it's not the fastest in the world. Sometimes you need to just jam something together and you've got a huge set of data and you want a little bit more speed out of it, so there's other ways. All of these things have pros and cons, and the idea is to not just have one screwdriver, but to have as many as possible so that when you need to wedge something apart, you've got the right tool for that particular job. So that's actually a huge feature. VBScript, to go back a few years, was much, much more structured, much more limited. It wasn't a very extensible language. It was kind of what it was. It had about 109 built-in functions, and if they didn't do the job, well, go away. So the idea here is to give you as much option as possible. That's a good thing. Now, it means the complexity level goes up a bit. It means you've got to keep track of a few more things, but that's the cost of the power of it. So it's ultimately beneficial to you.
Yeah, and it's that source of this inspiration you get from other people. Like, how did you do that? Like, what? What? Oh, wow, that's clever.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so you see now I can analyze that thing. Now all of a sudden I've got a tool that's pretty darn useful, right? I can analyze threads. You can't do this from the GUI. Just say, hey, just show me these two things. So that's pretty fun. So let's take a look at actually the sort of things I get to play with. Okay.
I kind of just want to do a dramatic reading of that thread now.
I know. Oh, take different sides?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Maybe some dance.
Oh, yeah, do it through interpretive dance.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm in. So notice here, I've got a custom object. Okay, so I got this custom object, and it's got a body, which is a note property, and a created at, and HTML, and the ID, and the issue, and the update, and the URL, and the user. Okay, so that's kind of cool. So the thing was, now I'm losing track. Where am I? Okay, so now that I've built this general purpose tool, I can use it for other areas, right? So before I was looking at the PowerShell owner, but I was looking at the PowerShell RFC repo. Now I'll look at the main repo. There's a particular issue I heard about, 2233. I'm gonna format it as a table. I'm gonna say it's the day, and what is the day? And the answer is it's an expression where I take the object and I grab the created at property, and I grab day of week, and then I'm gonna add the name, which again is a user and an expression, login, and the body.
And this illustrates the upside of making that function pretty general purpose, because now we can do lots of different things and we never have to go back and dig into that thing. It also makes it easier to debug. It's got fewer moving parts. And once it's debugged, we know it works. So now we can start using that in other places, and if there's a problem, we have some confidence that that first thing might not be the problem because it's simple and we've used it in several instances and it was fine. So the problem might be elsewhere. So keeping things really tightly scoped, little walls around them, also really makes debugging and troubleshooting a lot faster.
Exactly. And so the lessons here were, you know, a little bit of formality goes a really long way. And of course, objects rock, right? My buddy can't do this in his curl script, right? This is pretty cool stuff. Okay, so happy days. Now I thought, okay, well, that was great, but types make things a lot better. Okay, so the problem was that, gosh darn, where did I go? Okay, 100. Okay, so you noticed I had a PS custom object there, right? So now what I'm gonna do, looks the same. But now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna insert a type, okay? So remember, when I did get member, it just said it was a PS custom object, okay? So now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna give it a type, and then I can update. Once I have a type, I can start to party on that type, okay? So PowerShell has this adaptive type system. The adaptive type system, so just so you see this, $A equals GPS LSASS, $A, right? $A dot PS type names, okay? So this is the type hierarchy, okay? But notice, it's a synthetic type hierarchy. If you take a look at .NET, you say, of course, it's a .NET object. That's what the type hierarchy is. No, my friends. It's a synthetic type hierarchy. So if I say get WMI object.
So if you think of these objects that PowerShell spews out as just a data structure, right? That particular command, get process? Get process always spits out an object with a particular structure. So the type name is just a way to uniquely identify that kind of structure, which is why it's called a type name. And once you can uniquely identify that particular structure, PowerShell can do stuff to it. It can add things to it. The default formatting in PowerShell, like when you run get process or get service, you get that nice default formatting. That's all triggered by the unique type name. When you run the command, PowerShell says, oh, this is the type name for that. I know how to display that. Here's what I'll do. Whereas what Jeffrey was doing before was just using a very generic type name, PS object. Like, anything you create yourself by default is a PS object. It's not unique. It doesn't represent just that one kind. And so PowerShell can't really do a lot of cool stuff because it's not uniquely identified. It doesn't have a name like Dave or Linda or something, right? But once you name it, once you call it Dave, it is a thing, and PowerShell can recognize it and treat it with a lot of cool features.
Yeah, so here I did WMI, and I got WMI Win32 BIOS, and when I take a look at its type names, you notice the first few here are the .NET type system. But then all of a sudden, what the heck? Notice here, well, that's the last higher order of the .NET type, then I have a pound sign, and then these things. And what you're seeing there is that is the SIM type hierarchy. Right, WMI type hierarchy. And the answer is that this is the synthetic type system, and these are just strings. And so you know what? You can party with those strings. You can say things like insert 0. And voila, it has a new type name, PowerShell Fulfills Me. There you go. So you can do anything you want with that. Now, the reason why that's interesting is because then you can update the type. So update type data, you give it a type name. So what I'm going to do is I'm get these objects. They're PS custom objects because we just, I don't know what the heck they are. It just converted from a JSON document. And I'm going to give it a type, JPS.getIssueComment.
Now, he made that up.
Made it up.
You get to make it up whatever you want to. He could have called it Barney. Might have been more fun. But okay. He did it this way.
And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to update it, and I'm going to add a member, a script property. And I'm going to give it a name, login, and its value now is $ this, because I'm operating in the context of the object, username user.login. Okay, so all those places where I had to enter that script, it's like, yeah, that's cool, but it's cool that I can do that. It's a pain in the butt that I have to do that. I don't have to put up with that. I know PowerShell. Okay, so then what I'm going to do is, remember, there was when you output it, it showed you everything, and I always had to do this format table. What you can do is each type has a default display property set. So I'm going to say that it's ID and body. So if you don't do anything, those are the things that are going to be displayed. There's also things like the default display property and key sets, et cetera. But let's take a look at this. So other than that one function to add that one line to add the type, this is exactly the same as before. So let's just show you, if I do this, this is before I update the type. Before I update the type, I run this.
Same thing as before.
Get GORP. But now I update the type.
Did you say GORP?
Yeah, GORP. Now I'll update the type and I run this. No GORP. Okay. Okay, so remember.
Important thing here, the underlying data structure is the same. He did not get rid of any data. And this is distinct because he could have accomplished this same visual display by just using select object, right? I just show me these two things. But once you do that, it removes all the other data. It only keeps what you selected. That might then ruin some other downstream task you might want to accomplish in the future. So what he's done is he's created a nicer looking default display, which is why it's called that, without eliminating the underlying data. So you could still go filter on that data, export that data, sort it by that data. It's all still there. PowerShell's just not displaying it by default. So that's, again, this idea of doing everything really tightly scoped and not thinking about what all the tasks might be, but just letting all the data live there so that whatever tomorrow's task is can still consume it.
Now, how many people have used update type data themselves? Okay, not so many.
Six.
How many people think it got introduced in PowerShell version 5? I don't know if he's going to get this right. Anyway, introduced PowerShell version 1. PowerShell version 1. This adaptive.
This has been here forever. Okay.
Yeah, been here forever. And so part of this is, I've long said, I think, that people still don't know half of the things that we introduced into PowerShell version 1. There's an incredibly rich system there. I mean, really, it's almost like a little mini operating system in its scope and complexity. There's an amazing amount of stuff there. But what that means is, go explore. You will find amazing things. And you can do that. You don't have to wait for version 5 to do that. You can do that with version 1. Okay, so anyway, awesome. So now I do a get member. And notice I have this new property, login. It's a script property. And here's the value. By the way, so you might have seen that. I put a lot of effort into making get process be something you can learn. So notice get process has a ton of script properties, right? So when you say get, you know, when you ask for the company or the description or the file version, I don't know, did you know you could do that? Did you know you could say GPS pipe to sort company, pipe to sort company and then name, multi-sort, format table minus group company? Did you know you could do that? Oh, here's from Synaptics Incorporated. I don't know why you need two. Sun plus IT, I have no idea what that is. That's probably worth looking at.
That's your monitor.
Okay, Okay, I don't know what Sun Plus, I'm gonna look into that. Realtek, okay, so that information's somewhere, right? And where was it? Well, the answer is down some deep .NET hierarchy, right? But the script properties allow you to simplify things. There's more things like property set. Do you ever play with the property set? Check this out. GPS, pipe two, format table, and you know you can give property names. You can also give a property set name. Okay, so look at that, PS configuration. PS configuration is a property set. It has name, ID, priority class. So what the heck? So you just give one name, and you get those things.
And you can add your own property sets too. So if you've got some object that a command is returning that isn't exactly what you need on a regular basis, you can write a little function to wrap around it, add what you need, and then it'll be what you need.
Yeah.
So it's really adaptable.
Okay, so now imagine I could say, actually, let's do it the right way. Say, now all of a sudden you can do things like get issue comment, issue 16, sort it by login, format group by login name, ID, and body, right? Again, we try and, in PowerShell, we strive for a world where you think about what you want, you type it, and you get it. Man, that's pretty darn close. That's pretty darn close. And again, there are various techniques. The things, the way developers surface their world to you is not going to give you that. So we give you the tools so you can close the gap with things like the adaptive type system. So use that and then share it so that other people benefit. Okay.
I'm never engaging in GitHub commentary after reading this.
Okay, so here we take a look at all these things. And notice that you get the ID in the body, but you don't have to use it with format table, right? So here, right? So I did format list, I get everything, but if I just do this, I don't have to use format list anymore. So there's a hidden property that you don't even get, secrets of the PowerShell masters. Here it comes. You're all sworn to secrecy. There's a parameter, a property that you have that's hidden even to get member. You don't see it in get member. It's called PS standard members. It's common to everything. Or not. What the heck?
You just had a period at the end, I think.
Oh, did I?
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Okay, and so it has the default display property. Right? So when you just said, if you do something like $C pipe 2, format wide minus column 8, how did it know to pick the ID? And the answer is I set it as part of the
Because ID is the default property.
Exactly.
Like if you don't tell it a property, that's the one it will glom onto.
All right. So again, in the end, now what I can do is things like get those, again, think, get the get issue comment for issue 16, where the login is in this format. So again, you think, you type, you get it. But notice here, okay, where dot, where's my IntelliSense? Where's my IntelliSense? I have no IntelliSense. Now notice when I have the object. Oh, man. Hush now. Hush, Abe. When I have the instance, I get IntelliSense. But when I was running the command, I don't have IntelliSense, right? And so the answer is, because that's what output type is about, right? Output type is the thing that tells you this command is returning this type. And so when I have the instance, I can look at the instance. But when I can't, when I just have the thing, you're going to run this code, what's it going to return? Well, I don't know. So you got to tell us. So that's what the output type does.
Statically, what he's saying is statically, just by examining the code without running it, you don't know what kind of object's going to come out. And so PowerShell can't help you with the IntelliSense feature. But when you tell it, by the way, I'm going to be spewing a bunch of these, it can go, now I know what's going to happen. I can go look that up. And I can help you from there.
Yeah, so here I updated that. And if I say get command, get issue comment dot out, output type. Okay, so now I know the output type. And so when I do that again, I do it again. Oh, I lost it. Where? Oh, it shouldn't have worked. Anyway, the reason why it shouldn't work is because it tells me the type, but PowerShell, it's just a string at this point. PowerShell doesn't know anything about that type. It's not a registered type. It's just a string. So now I thought, okay, well, let's party with the types. And so what I did was I created a thing to create types, okay? So what I did was I said, I'm going to make a class. Now, this is PowerShell version 5, okay? But what I did was, if you take a look at this instance, you see, hey, these things are all strings, okay? But in fact, I know a URL isn't a URL. Anyway, so what I did was I created a class that took an object, a function, took an object and created a class. This is what we call metaprogramming. Is this crazy? So wait till you see this. Wonk. And so I grab that object.
It's a technical term, wonk.
Yeah. I grab it, the input object, and I create a class and I give it a class name. How crazy is that?
Right? Now PowerShell knows what that looks like.
Exactly.
Statically, it knows this data structure has these elements that go with it, so now it can help.
And by the way, so the way I did that is with a here object, or here string. So this is a here string. It matches everything to here. And because I use double quotes, I can do things like this and run, and it'll evaluate expressions within the string. If I use single quotes, it won't. Anyway, so here strings are a fantastic way to create classes and such.
We've got 2 minutes left, too.
Get out of here.
Well, no, in two minutes, we will.
Let's fast forward. So you see what I did was I created this thing and created all these strings, and then I ran it. I get IntelliSense. But then a great thing about PowerShell is I went and started changing these things. I said, hey, that's a date time. That's a URL, right? That's a URL. That's a time, and then I added time span. I said, hey, get freshness, return some value, show comment, go and invoke something. So check this out, right? So the thing is, step by step, you party and you make it better and better and better. A bunch of update stuff. Now I get issue comment 7 for issue 16, sort it by created at. Right now I'm going to do a date time sort. If it was a string, you can't really sort date time strings. And I format it by table, and I got a freshness ID. Look at that. I mean, that's just crazy stuff, right? Created Monday, how fresh it is. Here's the body. And then I captured that. Show the comment. So the lesson here, lesson for the whole stuff is PowerShell is fun, right? PowerShell's fun. It enables you to hack, enables you to craft the world that you want to have and you want to experience.
And you can gorp and wonk.
And you can do that anytime you want.
So, but think of where he started, right? The end result's fun, and this has obviously been a lightning tour of this, but just started by hacking around at the command line. But don't stop there, right? Once you have something useful, make it fully useful in PowerShell. So you make it a function. It's more reusable. You add a type name so that PowerShell can identify it. You create a class so that now PowerShell knows what that type actually looks like. And it becomes a full-fledged member of the shell. It works and smells and acts just like everything else that was built in. So it becomes more functional, more reusable. And you learn a lot along the way. And once you've put, I know it, a lot of times you can look at that and go, I was just trying to get some comments off the website. Why do I have to do all this? Because once you've invested that effort and hacking that together, the rest of this, once you've done it a couple of times, is not hard. I mean, it's a lot of almost boilerplate, right? You just kind of wrap it in a function. That's not hard. The class stuff gets very boilerplate. It looks this very similar every single time. But the end result of that minimal extra investment is a much, much more robust tool, not just a little one-liner that you hacked out and used the one time. Now you've got a tool that you can give to other people. And yeah, maybe you're not going to be worried so much about a reusable component that grabs stuff off of Git. He needs that because he's got to monitor how people are responding to his product. That's part of his job. Your job might be stuff that brings something out of a database that you've got for an application, right? Or does something to Active Directory, or does something with a file server. But when you make it into a tool, you will never have to do that job again. You can pass that on to less paid people who can just run that tool because you've done a good job of it. It works like PowerShell now.
If only there were a book that explained such a concept. Do you know of such a book?
It's in the bookstore. Learn PowerShell toolmaking in a month of lunches was called toolmaking for exactly that reason. It's not about making scripts. It's about making tools that work like everything else in PowerShell. So if you've got someone on the help desk who's just starting to learn PowerShell, when your tool works like everything else, it helps them learn it faster and helps them use it. And it means you are no longer solving problems. You are giving other people tools so that they can solve problems. And that means you don't have to answer the phone or deal with users. And that's kind of the career goal.
And as I will tell you, as a manager, when you find somebody that makes other people great, those are the people you want to keep. Those are the people you want to reward. Those are the people you want to keep around you. It's a great book. A lot of people have read it and just like, oh, now I get it.
Good path? Yeah? Cool.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Have a good day.